Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Atrás para Frenkie de Jong, lleva la bola Frenkie de Jong, balón largo para Rafinha de cabeza, gol, 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 buena posición de Rafinha, que pase de Frenkie de Jong para Rafinha, que mete la cabeza, vaselina.
Hello and welcome to La Liga Lowdown. It's the match day 14 recap pod, the final match day before the World Cup break. And there was plenty of action this midweek in La Liga. I'm your host, Matt Clark. I'm delighted to be joined by Rory Barlow. How are you tonight, Rory?
Yeah, I'm actually quite energised. This is how sad my life has got. I was delighted to hear Carlo Ancelotti complaining about a number of red cards. Finally, somebody has brought this up properly. He was saying about how La Liga has about 55, must be up to about 57, 58 now, red cards compared to the Premier League's 10 or so. And Ancelotti, I could not be more on board that ship with you.
I think it's 59, to be honest, with Edgar's tonight. But we'll go with that. It's still we're on course for a lot. Muchas rojas. Anyway, since the last podcast with yourself and Roman, quite a lot happened before even the match day started. On Monday, Elche sacked Jorge Almirón again. And then Real Madrid went to Vallecas and lost a barnstormer 3-2. It was their first league defeat of the season, and they lost the leadership of the title race, and Barca are therefore top. Which leads us neatly into match day 14 itself, where Barca knew that going to El Sadar, tough place to go of course, but they knew that if they went to El Sadar and won, they would be guaranteed to be top at Christmas and for the duration of that World Cup break. What a game this was, Rory. Osasuna, 1-0 up, Lewandowski sent off, PK sent off at half-time off the bench, so his career ended like that of Zinedine Zidane, getting sent off in his final professional match. Although I would say that Zidane's was a headbutt in a World Cup final, so not quite the same. But then, an unprecedented win for Barca. They've never before come from a goal down and a man down at half-time to win a game away from home. The floor is yours. What a game.
Yeah, it was incredible, wasn't it? I think it was just so rare that we've seen Barcelona have adversity like that. And even by any standards, even by Real Madrid standards, a man down and a goal down after sort of half an hour at El Sadar, they were playing poorly as well. It's not as if this was just kind of an accident. They were given the ball away in horrendous situations. And I think they were lucky enough just to get to half-time as they were. Not as if Osasuna were creating massive amounts of danger, but after that half-time break, after Piqué getting sent off, maybe that was the magic touch. They just needed somebody to cuss out the referee. After that, you saw such a mature Barcelona. Barcelona that played sort of very united, very close together. I mean, Osasuna, I think they'll be disappointed. Yagoba Arrasate, after the game, said that we didn't know if we were kind of coming or going. We didn't know whether to sort of attack or defend. I think it was a bit disconcerting for Los Rojillo, but yeah, Barcelona so united coming through that adversity, knowing that it was the league leadership on the line. I think it's just so unusual for many Barcelona fans, and just in general, to see Barcelona come through that adversity, especially since Leo Messi has left the club, which is, I feel like bizarrely, Leo Messi's departure kind of went under the radar last season. But yeah, since Messi left, you just don't kind of see that from Barcelona.
Well, I was going to say that was exactly what you sent in a message. You said, big buzz, those wins only happen with Messi normally. And yeah, you're absolutely right. But what about the winning goal from Rafinha, the head of the ball from the back from Frenkie, who of course may not have been playing at the back had Piqué not been sent off. It might have been Gerard Piqué brought on instead of, Gavi came on, but Frenkie might still have been in the midfield to accommodate Piqué or even at the end when the debutant came on. But that phenomenal ball over the top and Rafinha, to be fair, fantastic awareness to know that Aitor was off his line to then just guide the header into the net. And yeah, cue celebrations galore from Xavi and the backroom staff on the sidelines. They knew the value of this win. And yeah, it put them 5 points clear ahead of Madrid's game. So now, with Barca on top of the league, are they favourites for the title, do you think?
Well, I made them favourites at the start of the season, and I'm kind of sticking by that. But I mean, I think in most people's mind they won't be favourites, because I think these last kind of 2 weeks and the flip between Barcelona and Real Madrid, Barcelona were, if not in crisis mode, then certainly struggling deeply in La Liga as well. You saw that kind of win against Valencia was not a brilliant performance, but they sort of pulled it out of the bag, whereas Real Madrid were kind of cruising, and that Girona sort of draw really put the brakes on them. And I think one of the things that, as good as kind of Real Madrid have been so far, we'll come on to them, it's very difficult to kind of just click back into gear when you kind of take your eye off the ball or when you hit some difficulties. And I think for Barcelona to come out of this tricky period, these first 14 games on top of the league, is absolutely massive for them and for their title challenge, because I think the only real direction is up for this Barcelona side. It could get worse. I mean, I'm not putting it beyond the realms of football, but yeah, I think this Barcelona has a lot more room for improvement than this Real Madrid side, which does, it will get Karim Benzema back, hopefully, touch wood.
Yes, of course. So we'll mention their defeat at Vallecas on Monday night, which was just an amazing evening of football in itself. But they did win in matchday 14 to cut the gap back to 2. A 2-1 win over Cadiz. Eder Militao was on the score sheet again with another header. There's a bit of Vini Culebron once again with some heavy tackles and some potentially, some would say provocation, some would say being targeted. And then, of course, Toni Kroos with an absolute golazo on the volley.
It's come to Vinicius. He tries to swing one and it falls loose for Kroos. Kroos on the volley! A belter of a goal from the German. He is back!
We even had another collector's item, a Luka Modric sitter missed. What was more incredible for you, Rory? Kroos' golazo or Modric's miss?
I was certainly more shocked by Modric's miss, to be honest. I think Kroos' golazo, you can kind of see that like coming. You could see him shaping up for the volley and you could imagine that hitting the back of the net. I don't think anybody, it didn't even enter the mind that Modric would play that past the post. It was almost like a straight pass. It was like hit very firmly towards the sort of advertising hoardings, and it looked as if Modric had intentionally put it there. It was very bizarre to see, but a big win for Real Madrid, because I think, yeah, if they hadn't picked up the points here, then it would have been not total disaster, but the questions over Ancelotti would have been pretty heavy and pretty hard going to have an 8-week break. Where all anybody can think about Real Madrid is how they've kind of chucked away 7-8 points in those last kind of 3-4 weeks. So yeah, big win for Real Madrid. And I think, yeah, Ancelotti, as I was saying, I was celebrating his comments on the referees after the match. And I've just come for that press conference, so it's pretty fresh in the mind. And he did point out that we've come through this 14 games, we've done our job. And we've done so without the Ballon d'Or, without our forward who scored 50 goals last season or so. And I think that's maybe been lost a little bit because Benzema's been absent for so much of this first part of the season. So it's been kind of skirted over. We've become used to the fact that Real Madrid are having to deal without Benzema. But it is a massive loss and we've been praiseworthy of how well they've coped without him so far. But it is, I mean, it's going to have an impact eventually. And I think these last few weeks, it really has.
Yes, and they've also had to do it without many clean sheets too. 7 games at the Bernabeu, they've conceded in every single one of them. Thibaut Courtois still hasn't kept a clean sheet in a league yet this season, which is quite incredible. And Cadiz got a lifeline, Lucas Perez, taking advantage of a Courtois blunder, another rare collector's item piece in this game. But they couldn't quite, I mean, Espino nearly did it right at the end to grab the equaliser, but they couldn't quite get that, and Madrid held on. So, yeah, 2 points in the title race. That's how that sits. As for their rivals in Madrid, oh my word, they are very much not in the title conversation. Atletico Madrid.
And it's drilled in, lost by Oblak, and it's a chance for Jaume Costa, and Marigi with the tap-in. After Jaume Costa's effort was deflected into his path, it was a simple, simple finish for the informed striker. 8 goals for him now this season, and Mallorca lead against Atletico.
Went to Mallorca, and they were left shipwrecked by the Pirates. Magnificent Marici once again. 8 goals for him, scored in each of his last 5 appearances. Mallorca were fabulous, but we have to start with Atleti. How bad is this, and how much worse could it get?
How much worse could it get? It's a good question, because there's just so little sign of it getting better. I mean, Morata had a couple good chances, but the only... Joao Felix, he has had a good couple of weeks, but the only forward-thinking player who I can say has had a definitively good season for Atletico Madrid is the one that they couldn't play for the first kind of half of this mini-section of the season, and that's Antoine Griezmann. He was providing some fantastic balls into the box, but outside of him, Diego Simeone can't rely on any of his attackers, so he needs to work out a system that's getting more out of his attackers, because his defence is threadbare. We've spoke about it at the start of the season, we spoke about it during the season. It just, you can't rely on Savic and Jimenez at this point. Reinildo, again, he's their only kind of guarantee as a defender. And so Simeone has to do a lot of thinking. I think it will help when Koke comes back. I think that's impacted them in recent weeks and really been part of their struggles. But overall, we're seeing a team that, I mean, we mentioned it a few weeks ago, this team doesn't have a sense of identity. I don't know what they're good at. And so Simeone, as much as we have kind of faith in him, I think both of us are very much more on the side of Simeone is not the issue and there's more to be fixed around him. Eventually, some of the criticism does have to fall on him, because they are vastly underperforming their assets.
Yes, they fell out of the top four with this defeat in Mallorca. Only 1 point from 9 in the last 3. And of course, that was against an Espanyol side at home with playing against 10 men for most of that game. So again, a disappointing point that was. And 5 games without a win in all competitions, which is the joint worst run under Simeone. As you say, though, a lot of neutrals are saying, you know, this could be the end of the cycle. He needs to go. But I think you can see from Atleti fans, they're saying, well, no, this... he's the only guy that could come through this. And again, for those that criticise Koke, people say, what does he do in a game? Well, you've seen without him what they miss. So that's, again, harder to say what he does do, but probably easier to highlight what a gaping hole there is in that midfield without him.
Yeah, you know, if I can just come in very quickly, a lot of people sort of saying that, yeah, Simeone should go. But I mean, realistically, if Atleti continue to finish in the Champions League, is it actually worth them the heartbreak and the upheaval of them sacking Simeone? Would that not do more damage to Atleti to have sort of an acrimonious end to Simeone's tenure than just finishing the Champions League and hoping and trusting in a manager who's done an incredible job to get you back up there and to sort of revitalise the team? I think, yeah, okay, there's issues, But yeah, I think the sacking Simeone could send you into... you might get better, you might sort of perform closer to your assets this season, but it could also send you into a spiral. So it's be careful what you wish for in this case.
Indeed. Well, speaking of how much worse it could get, they have a Copa match to negotiate before the World Cup. And then when they come back in La Liga, it's Elche at home. So if they don't win that, then yeah, it won't be a very happy new year for Atleti fans. We have to touch on Mallorca though, because... how good are they? How good is Aguirre, his structure, his setup, his idea, and Murici, my word, revelation player?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I questioned Roman, was he the best value buy in La Liga this summer? And I'm going to answer it, he was, because he's, what has he scored, 7 goals out of their 13? He's just fantastic.
I think it's eight.
Jeez. Yeah. Okay. So I was operating on outdated facts there, but Marici, I think more than just the goals as well. He's been clinical this season, but I think also we saw the impact that he had last season, and this season I think we've seen sort of a further step. We've seen sort of his build-up play, the way he attacks the ball, and the way that Mallorca play off him has improved even more. I think they've adapted more towards each other. The link between him and Kanjin Lee has got even stronger. And I think, yeah, this is a more settled Aguirre side. I think Aguirre is just a fantastic character to have in La Liga. And you can see just how the sort of increase in one-liners that he's whipping out in the press conferences is symptomatic of how well his team's doing, how passionate they are. How much fun Mallorca are having. I think they're one of the teams that's certainly having the most fun in La Liga this season.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And that's his 150th league win as a coach in La Liga, and a fantastic way to bring it up against Diego Simeone's Atleti. We'll have to go to a break now, but when we come back, we'll be talking about all the rest of the matches this week, with plenty of European race, big games, as well as intriguing battle at the bottom. Stay with us.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dale, Álvaro.
¡Gol! Saca la calculadora Paco de Guruceta para el Atleti.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. It's our match day 14 recap. I'm here with Rory Barlow. Athletic Club had a fantastic week. They are back in the top four with a comfortable 3-0 victory over El Valladolid. Very high-scoring Athletic Club too. Only the top two have outscored them. And in Gorka Guruceta, have they found the heir to Aritz Aduriz?
You know what? I'm going to throw this back to you, Matt, because I know you're a big Gorka fan. So here's your chance. The floor is yours.
Well, he's only played in, well, less than 200 minutes of La Liga action. He actually started this game, which I believe was his first ever La Liga start. And he scored two goals. He took them so well, the second one in particular. The way he just knows where the goal is, over his shoulder, and just fires it in low. I mean, Valladolid are a very decent side under Pacheta. They had no answer to him on this occasion. And yeah, his minutes per goal ratio is what, one every 39 minutes, which is better than Robert Lewandowski. It's better than Erling Haaland. I mean, I rest my case.
That's a pretty good case. I think it's weird almost that Athletic, I think, still, even this season, we sort of question whether they quite have the goals in them to make that top four challenge. But just in general, across that attack, there's so many options now playing so well that Valverde is almost maybe struggling to fit Guruceta in, because You've got Iñaki, obviously. You've got Nico. The two of them are, if not guaranteed to start, they're pretty close. You've got Muniain, who you have to fit in. Sanset has been moved further back to kind of accommodate them. Berenguer's always been kind of very effective for Athletic since he returned. So yeah, a lot of options for Athletic. And I have to admit, it felt like they were kind of struggling in the last kind of 3-4 weeks. But the fact that they've come through that struggle, they played a lot of the big teams in kind of a row and got through that period, and they're still in the top four, bodes very well for Valverde.
It does indeed. We'll be very fascinated to see how they will kick on in the new year. As for a team that is rather struggling and stuttering in this race, it's Betis. They went to Mestalla and lost 3-0. Another red card, this time Edgar. That's 7 in 14 match days, so they're on course for 19 across the season, which is, again, back on you with red cards, quite ridiculous, although there can be few complaints with this one, 2 yellows. Valencia needed the win. It was their first in 6, but yeah, miserable night in Mestalla for Betis. I think it just summed up by a track-suited Manuel Pellegrini, absolutely soaked to the skin. Even his fine hair was just flat and just feeling so sorry for himself. And yeah, Betis, that's just 2 wins in 8 in La Liga, and they have fallen to 6th, even below Atleti. So if you think Atleti are in crisis, perhaps maybe Betis. And it's very tight, of course, but Betis, yeah, it's not quite clicking, is it? They're missing players through suspension injury. What's your take?
Yeah, flat is probably the word for their performance at Mestalla. You could see just the almost collective kind of slump and shoulders going down after Edgar got sent off. That was a team that had nothing left to give. I mean, bearing in mind they played with 9 men for 40 minutes against Sevilla on Sunday, and then they're back down to a man disadvantage again. Yeah, Betis, I think, just needed the break, to be honest. And yes, I do agree that they have tripped up in recent weeks, but I think Betis almost again were relying on injuries coming back, and I think Pellegrini will be pleased enough just to get back to sort of full fitness hopefully after the break. He'll be pleased that they're still in contention, because although they are 6th, they're only a couple points behind, so they're still very much in this top 4 race. It's very tight up there between those kind of 4 teams from 3rd to 6th. And so, yeah, you get Fekir back, you get Juanmi back, he should be back as well. And Borja Iglesias, obviously, from suspension. I think Pellegrini just wanted the break. And this was bound to be, probably, depending on how far they go in the Copa del Rey and the Europa League, the toughest stage of their season to navigate, having those kind of 6 group games plus the condensed league season with such a small squad. We pointed it out before. And, yeah, you had, I think Paulo Koku is, I don't want to criticise him, but I think he's almost just a beneficiary of being there. I think he's kind of getting game time because there's just nobody else up, and the same could be said for, well, they've had to bring in kind of Juan Cruz from the youth team, which is good to see, and he's been decent enough since he came in, but this is a side that's really down to the bare bones.
Yeah, it is indeed. Well, let's quickly run through the Euro race then. There's only 7 points between 3rd and 11th. 3rd, La Real, 26 points. 4th, Athletic, 24. 5th, Atleti, 24 as well. 6th, Betis, also 24. As you say, very tight. 7th, Osasuna, 23. 8th, Rayo, 22. 9th, Villarreal, 21. 10th, Valencia, 19. And 11th, Mallorca, also 19. So yeah, very condensed. We have to mention La Real because they went to the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan and beat Sevilla. Again, Sevilla is probably the biggest story here, but La Real are 3rd, aren't they?
Yeah, well, this is the debate that we've been having kind of offline. Is you are convinced, I think, that La Real can make the top 4 this season. I am waiting until March just to see it, because I've been burnt too many times before by the Imanoleta, I think you called it earlier.
I kind of did, yeah. Regret that now, but
I'll stick with it. But yeah, La Real, they've been impressive. Let's not deny it. I mean, I think this victory plus the one at the weekend yesterday, the win at the weekend, didn't they? It's all merging.
1-1 draw with 10 men. 1-1 draw,
yes.
With 10 men.
So it was. So they kind of steadied the ship a little bit after those kind of 2-3 defeats in a row. And again, Imanol will just be pleased to get to this break. You've got Oyarzabal should be back after the break. And that's huge. I don't think we can really state how much of a miss it's been and that's been kind of worsened by the fact that Sadiq is not there. I think Alex Sorlot, I've actually really liked him this season. I think he's been fantastic, and I've really enjoyed the way he's kind of led the line, attacked, fought for La Real, but I still think that he's maybe not quite the most clinical. So we'll pause that debate until March, and then we'll see where we are, and maybe I will be forced to admit defeat. But I should say that I've been really enjoying La Real this season, I think. Bryce Mendes has been fantastic. Mika Merino leads the league in assists. One of the, arguably, is he Toni Kroos, Fede Valverde, Mikel Merino? Is that an argument we can have that he's maybe one of the best midfielders in the league this season? So yeah, La Real have been very impressive. I'm waiting to see it for at least three quarters of the season, if not four.
Well, let's see. Maybe they're both Betis and Real Sociedad will finish in the top four and then we're both happy. So we have to talk about Sevilla though, because again, like the derby, there were red cards galore. Two in the first half, Ivan Rakitic and Tanguy Nyamzu. In a way, it was a valiant effort because they were 2-0 down with nine men and they actually scored and kept it at 2-1 for the entirety of the game. La Real looked, as you say, looked tired and weren't clinical to kill the game. And the Sevilla fans kind of appreciated the valiant efforts, but it is another defeat. They are in the bottom three and will be until, well, New Year's Eve. So it's just such a contrast, isn't it? Last Christmas Day, they were second, just 4 points off the top of the table. Now they are in the relegation zone. I mean, they are in a relegation battle. There's no two ways about it, aren't they?
It's una locura. Nobody could have seen this coming. No matter how finished...
Not even Sam Leveridge.
Not even Sam Leveridge, who was the most down on them at the start of the season. No matter how finished you thought Lopetegui's cycle was, this drop-off has been ridiculous. And Sampaoli, the pressure will be really be on him at the start of the sort of resumption of La Liga. If we see a similar side to the one that we've just seen, the one that we've seen over the last three, 4 months, because based off the last kind of few games in general, I don't think we've seen much difference. I think Sevilla are playing a little bit differently, and I think they're playing with a little bit more ambition. But in terms of kind of effectiveness, and in terms of if you're the opposition and you're looking at Sevilla, I don't think you see too much difference between the Lopetegui and the Sampaoli side in terms of difficulty. I think you see a similar enough side in terms of can we get results here. So yeah, the pressure's really on Sampaoli. If they start in similar fashion to the one we've just seen, they're in big, big trouble, and you never know how poorly these things can go. I still don't think they'll get relegated. I think they'll be okay, but yeah, I mean, you look at kind of Valencia in 10th place and you're thinking, do Sevilla have enough to kind of finish above them? I mean, it is very tight, we should say that.
Yes, it is indeed, but they are certainly in the mire, as well as Elche, who are the super colista at Christmas, only 4 points on the board. As you said in your piece on our Substack, llonline.substack.com, Elche have had as many coaches as points this season, which is in itself pretty damning. They actually scored early on here, but they couldn't hold on. Girona grew in the game and they got their first away win of the season, 2-1. At the Martinez Valero, Tati Castellanos and another from Ivan Martin with the goals for Girona. Another good day for Michel. Another defeat for Elche. Peremia was saying that, look, we're playing with fear. We need to be self-critical. We need to just basically get ourselves together and sort it out over the break. Because, yeah, they are rock bottom, marooned. You know, use any despairing adjective you want. It's looking almost impossible for them to stay up at this point.
Yeah, Peremia also said we've made a ridiculousness out of ourselves. I can't think of the anglicized or the English version of that, but you know what I mean. They have been ridiculously bad, and the piece I was writing, I compared it to 26 days later, which was the gap between Almiron being hired and fired, and it's a horror film, and it opened up a whole sort of barrel of adjectives I could use about apocalyptic and disgraceful, and yeah, it's. I mean, Elche, I had sort of concerns about them at the start of the season, but I think the piece that I wrote kind of focused on Bragarnik's handling of this. He put out a letter this week taking some of the responsibility and saying that he's fine taking some of the critics if it means that it takes the pressure off the players and helps Elche to get results, which is all very well, but you need to help them get results by making sort of good decisions. And I think the management of them has made it almost impossible for them to survive. I mean, miracles do happen. They're still only, what, 8 points separated, which is a large gap, but given how bad they've been, it's almost not too bad. It's hard to see any hope for them. And the morale, I mean, Levante went on a ridiculous run themselves of kind of not winning at the start of the season, but even that side was streaks ahead of this one. And I think we're at the point now where most teams look at Elche and say, if we don't win this game, then we've really messed up and we need to take a look at ourselves. So big problems down in Alicante.
Yes, and it won't be Paco López to save them because he's been appointed at Granada. Only Sporting in 1996-97 had a worse tally after 14 games in the 3 points for a win era. They only had two. And they did go down. Elsewhere, Almeria picked up another home win, their fourth consecutive at the Power Horse Stadium, beating Getafe 1-0. Gorgeous header from Leo Baptistao from a corner there, out-jumping Luis Milla to get the only goal of the game. Both sides kind of mid-table for now. Getafe, of course, will still be looking to improve after the break. Rayo, we've kind of mentioned them already with their phenomenal win on Monday, but they drew 0-0 with Celta in what was much less eventful on Thursday night, but they are unbeaten in six. Rayo haven't lost at home since August, and they're only 1 point off where they were at this stage last season, so the key for them will be to sustain it after Christmas. As for Celta, it's their first point under new coach Carlos Carvalhal, and it moves them out of the drop zone, as we say, at the expense of Sevilla. If you have any thoughts on that game, elsewhere we've just got another one here, Espanyol 0, Villarreal 1, which potentially is the most interesting one, no?
Yeah, that last game you mentioned, it's the battle of the embattled coaches. I mean, Diego Martinez, what's he, a point above the relegation zone? Okay, the RDT saga was damaging. There was problems that came out of that, and I think that really made for atmosphere of kind of uncertainty at the start of the season. But the resources that Espanyol have do not deserve to be down where they are. They have more resources. Hossolu has been scoring goals, so you can't even point to the strikers and say, well, they're just not going in. I think Braithwaite has been okay. He's notched a couple of goals too. It's been the defence that's been the big issue, and more pertinently,
goalkeepers,
yeah. Alvaro Fernandez and Benjamin Lecomte have been sharing the errors between them, but I think those errors, as much as sort of anything, they kind of speak to a wider problem in the defence at Espanyol, and a wider kind of, again, I'm trying to look for another word that's not culture or atmosphere, but chain of mistakes, and there's just uncertainty there. And I think that's one of the few things that we didn't expect from Diego Martinez. We expected a very strong, clear presence from Espanyol. It's been disappointing from them. I don't know if we've got time to move on to Quique Setién.
We certainly do, but I was just going to say, yeah, only two wins in 14 for Diego Martinez in his start at Espanyol, which I believe is the worst record of any Espanyol coach, which doesn't bode well. And as you say, at Granada, he was so keen on having that solid base first before they then express themselves. So yeah, he needs to sort that defence out over the break. He'll obviously have time to do so. But yeah, Quique Setién, first win, finally scored a goal. Okay, Espanyol's keeper scored it for them, but it's 3 points.
Yeah, it's going to be a nervous Monday morning because they've got that cup game coming up at the weekend, the Copa del Rey. And after that, I think we'll find out if Setién's going to keep his job, because there were chance for him to get the sack, as we mentioned, at the weekend. There was reports came out during the week, so 2-3 days later, that Setién was to be either had a small chance of retaining his job, or that the Espanyol match was to be decisive. Even that win, I think, didn't really settle nerves too much. I mean, I think if it had been a disaster to have lost, but the fact that they were poor, they were kind of hanging on, and Jero Rulli was the sort of decisive factor at the end for Villarreal, really sort of made the doubts bigger. And yeah, Quique Setién, I think, again, if he gets the time, then he's going to need to come back with improved performances very quickly after the break. If he doesn't, then I think that's totally on Fernando Roche. You can't sack a manager after 6-7 games. It's totally on you. If you take a decision and then you lose your confidence after, well, he lost the confidence after 4 games, and so these 3 games have been kind of a test of his confidence as well. But yeah, Setién, particularly the type of manager he is, and you know that he's very idiosyncratic. He has his style, he has his mentality, he's not going to move from that. I think if you bring someone in like that, going from Emery, who's the polar opposite of that. Emery will work out the best way to beat a different team and will adapt his side to that. I mean, he obviously has central tenets, but in general, he will look at the other side and try to exploit their weaknesses, whereas Setien looks at his side and tries to exploit their strengths. And so yeah, if you're going from one extreme to the other almost, and then to try and, or to think about sacking someone after 3-4 games, it's just, no words, to be honest.
Plenty of words, but yeah, no words. Yes, if that does happen, that will be quite the turn of events, even for Villarreal. So let's just quickly review then, just the relegation battle as it stands before the break. 15th down. Note, there are none of the promoted teams in this list because they've all, by and large, been pretty good. But yeah, 15th, Getafe, 14 points. Then Espanyol, 12. Celta, 12. And then in the relegation zone, Sevilla and Cadiz on 11 each, and then Elche on 4. To finish off, Rory, though, the World Cup squad, Lucho's World Cup squad, will be announced tomorrow or today if you're listening on Friday. Quick fire question, Rory, yes or no? One word. In or out, yes or no? Iago Aspas?
No.
Mikel Merino?
No.
Bryce Mendes?
No.
Ansu Fati?
Nope.
Oh my word, I was hoping to get at least one yes there. So, not many surprises in Rory's Lucho list. We'll see what the man himself brings on Friday. We'll be back with pods throughout the World Cup, so stay tuned for those. But for now, we have run out of time. Thank you so much, Rory, for your insights today.
No, a pleasure. And I'll finally stop talking.
No. The listeners absolutely love it, as do I. But I'm afraid we have to go now. But thank you very much for listening. Keep following us at La Liga Lowdown for all of your World Cup and Copa and transfer talk, everything. We'll be covering it. But for now, thank you very much, and we'll see you again soon. Adios.
Puede ser que sí. Bravo.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.